This is The Drop and the Turning, a podcast about music, place, and change, produced in partnership between Newark's Calgary and CJSW Campus and Community Radio. My name is Rebecca Bruton. I'll be speaking today with April Aliermo, who is a sound artist, bassist, writer, and community artist based in Tacoronto. What you just heard was an excerpt from her 2019 sound artwork, Artemis of Color. So a lot of what I focus on in this podcast is how people are connecting to place and to ecology. And so I'm curious if there's a time in your life, either the first time or any significant time, that you can think of feeling really connected to a non-human or more than human natural space.
I think so. My parents are both from the Philippines, and I've been, you know, making visits intermittently throughout, you know, my life. And 10 years ago, which was my second last visit, I was on this tiny boat. I was wandering around this island by myself. I was meant to meet a friend and his partner, but I got there like two, three days before them. And I think it's not usual for like a person, especially like, you know, a younger woman, to be going on these holidays on their own. So it was kind of like funny and eventually like tiresome, but like the bus like picked me up from the airport to take me to like this place. And then from there I had to take a boat. And then from there I checked into the hotel, and in all three places, they were like, "Oh, you're alone? Oh, you're alone?" And then I was like, "Yes, I'm alone. I'm meeting my friend soon." And it was just like, so like, they felt sorry for me and were shocked at the same time. And I'm like, "Oh my God." But I ended up meeting this guy there who just lived on the island, worked on the island, and took me on his brother's cool, like yellow, I don't even know how to describe this boat. You know, those boats that have like two balances.
Like a catamaran?
Like a catamaran. Yes, it was a mini catamaran. Exactly. It was yellow. And because of how small it was like I was really just sitting in the sea and the ocean. It was it's connected to the Pacific Ocean, but I think it was like the South China Sea, I would say. And it was like one of my happiest moments, where I just felt so connected to the movement of the water, the color. And I find water in general, and in the way it interacts with light and movement, it's like its own like optical illusion, like 3D hologram illusion, except it's real life. And if you just like stare, you know, I often like to just like make a sort of tunnel around my eyes with my hands so that I see nothing but the water. And it's really trippy. I don't know if that answered your question, but that is, you know, I still think about that, and it reminds me of how much I like, you know, being by giant bodies of water, and I still do. And nothing is like the ocean for me, with regards to that.
kind of taking the theme of place and land and water and feeling connected in different ways to it. A lot of the work, so I first sort of knew of your presence in the world through your band Hooded Fang, and have seen you crop up, seen and heard you crop up here and there over the last 10 to 15 years, long time. And one thing I notice is that I think you've been a really important presence for both like the millennial generation, but now younger generations as well, as a Filipinx human creating rock music, but also just creating as an artist in a very white dominated, like white dominant culture in Canada. And some of what I've read and heard you talk about is a real celebration of your dual identity. And I'm curious if you can talk about that, like how you navigate these different worlds of being a second generation Canadian, but also in the context of like the land we're living on as Canadians, which unless you're Indigenous is probably stolen. So yeah, I'm so curious about your connection, say, to ancestry, ancestral land, land rights, and then how you live and work with a sense of ethical responsibility here in Canada.
Huge question, Rebecca. Also, thank you for seeing me and paying attention to my work in the world. I feel like, you know, I'm just too awkward and like shy to really, you know, have that stardom diva style presence, but I like, you know, subtly like move through spaces. So it's cool when people see the work that I do. Thank you. You know, it's a complicated one. That's like a complicated one. Like that particular trip, actually, than what I mentioned that I took to the Philippines 10 years ago. When I left that island and I left the Philippines, that trip was about a month long. I like cried and I was like sad and I was grieving, and it was so interesting and bizarre because I had visited the Philippines before, but you know, being older and more aware of my history and my connection to that land, and imagining like these possible lives I could have had there. Of course, I'm like, oh, if I was here, I could be like a farmer and living by the ocean. But like, no, actually, that's not true at all, because both my parents grew up in the city. I probably just would find the other music weirdos, because there are pockets of them there, a lot of cool art happening. But it felt like that. It felt like saying goodbye to this potential or this possible, like, or this like multiverse life, you know? And there was no other kind of like goodbye, like not like, I mean, I just can't describe it. It's like, but it's in the same realm of saying goodbye to like a friend who's moving away, or breaking up with a partner, or, you know, when someone dies, but it's not quite that, but it just felt like it was in that same realm. And it was like this, again, this connection to, so this person that I had met and took me around the island, like took me on around on a motorbike, a boat, like went to visit his friend who was making lambanog in the trees, which is a coconut liquor, coconut alcohol. And it was just like I felt so connected in that way. But then in the other sense, I also don't feel connected because I grew up here in Canada. You know, when that particular trip was weird for me because I wanted to fit in so badly. again, as like a more conscious adult being back in the Philippines, I realized, you know, we're all that's where my cultural roots are. My parents raised me, you know, in a Filipino household, and a lot of my ways of thinking about like community and food and openness and having a good time and actually being like extra, we call bonga bonga. It's like when you're super extra. We have a term for that. It's called bonga bonga. Not one bonga, two bongas. It all comes from there, you know. But no matter how I dressed, how much I tried to speak the language, people knew that I wasn't from there. It's just, you know, the way I carry myself, my physical body movements are just different than how people there are raised, you know. And also, it's not a place that I live and I don't traverse those lands usually. I change my clothes. I like, you know, I tried to fit in, but even the little kids could tell that I wasn't from there. So I had this huge, I don't know. And I've had an ongoing like identity crisis in that way, like not quite feeling like I fit in Canada and not quite feeling like I fit in the Philippines. And then came to this accepting like, oh, you know what? I'm actually a hybrid culture. I am truly like Philippine Canadian, you know, not Filipina, not Canadian, but like Philippine Canadian. And, you know, a lot of my friends that I really get along with and connect with are also hybrid cultures, you know, whose parents migrated here and they were raised in Canada. And so it's tricky because it's, you know, I feel connection there, but it's also in a way like not mine. Also through colonialism, there's just like so much of that land that isn't mine, you know. There are like hundreds of indigenous cultures in the Philippines. And it's hard to know if any of my lineage is from any of that, you know? And then when I think about being here on Turtle Island, my parents migrated here for, you know, an easier, quote unquote, better life. Wanted to give my sister and I the life that they couldn't have, and they did. We just have so much freedom, economical freedom, political freedom, freedom to just be who we are and do what we want. A little too much, I think, my parents maybe regretted that a little bit and are really confused about my life choices. But, you know, so it was this place for them. And now that we're here, you know, and the more I learn about colonization here on Turtle Island, it's also not mine. It's also not my land, and it's not my parents' either. So in a way, it's kind of effed for me because none of this belongs to me. But also, it's totally fine. Like, I don't need to own any land in a lot of ways. And I mean, I'm very much in the, I think what the concept for me that I've related to the most is the idea of Gaia. And the earth being its own self-sustaining organism and humans being one of like the parts and pieces that make up this organism, Gaia, earth. going back to your original question, how do I mindfully make work with all of this in mind? You know, I do consider a lot of these, you know, like, I definitely consider representation and identity and how much is, you know, paying tribute, how much could be appropriative, you know, which voices are included or not. And of course, like, I'm not out to be representative of everybody, but I definitely like to make work that is approachable by all, things that people can or relate to, or at least get them to think about things and question and consider ideas they might have not. And the only real place I can come from is my own, you know, my own ponderings, my own explorations, my own identities. And yeah, that's how, you know, there's a lot of recent years, there's a lot of, there's been desire in the diaspora to connect with like the motherland of people, of parents, you know? And for me, again, like, there's hundreds of indigenous groups in the Philippines. I did a little bit of digging to see, you know, which my family might have, you know, been related to in one way or another in the past. And I don't actually know. And so for me, I'm like, I can't claim any of that, you know, and I'm not going to, but I can incorporate the things that I know, and the things that I feel connected to, and the things that I was raised with, you know, again, like togetherness, community, bonga bonga, going all out. So in my work, I do like to make a big show of it all, whether it's through sound. I really like working with visual artists. The two main visual artists that I have been working with recently in my sound art is Sahar Homami, this incredible, creative, intelligent, just very sweet video artist who I don't even know what they do, but they make these generative audio responsive visuals all by code, like coding it all. And I'm just like, I cannot believe you want to work with me. This is amazing. And Kat Estacio, who is also Filipinx, and they are in a band called Pantayo. They are a Filipinx like gong punk female ensemble, and they're really incredible. The southern part of the Philippines is really close to Indonesia, so there's an influence in terms of like the instruments that are being used, particularly with gong. So Kulintang is really big in the south, and so Pantayo plays with Kulintang and then the other related gongs. I don't know all the names of the gongs. I think the big one is called Agong, and there's a Saronai, really beautiful names. I recommend checking out Pantayo. But yeah, Kat Estacio also does visuals for me, and the work that they do is more from like a collage-y approach, which also works with my approach and also works with the culture that we're both coming from, which I would say is very much collagey, you know, through all the ways the Philippines has been colonized, we've come together to form this. It's a very weird culture, I would say. Very like beautiful, resilient culture where, you know, the country continues to experience so much political and economical turmoil, so much hardship, but is able to like have the best fucking time ever still. Like you go to the outdoor fruit and vegetable market and someone will be at their stall singing karaoke just to pass the time.
Going to this idea of bonga bonga, one of the reasons I knew I wanted to interview on this podcast is I remember reading, I think it's in a Music Works interview, that I can't remember who wrote it a few years ago. Was it Sarah Constant?
It might have been, I think it was Jiro. I have forgot his last name.
So there was a Music Works interview, and one of the things you talked about was going to Darmstadt, so I haven't been to Darmstadt, but I've been to Ostrava days, and I'm familiar with the whole world of like Darmstadt and Huddersfield Festival and all these new music institutions. And something that you talked about in the article was how strange it was for you to be at Darmstadt coming from a DIY indie rock world where a lot of the music deals with emotional content and expressivity and like and narrative, and then being at Darmstadt where it can be whether or not sometimes it's just that emotion is like absent, which comes from a one way into that is from a post-Cagean, like John Cage really influenced the idea that music doesn't need to be about something. But I find what it can lead to is outright hostility to like emotion and storytelling in music. And so in this interview, you talk about that sort of how you really felt like an outsider in this world and it was very weird for you. But then you also took a lot from being in that space and learned a lot. So I'm really curious about, you've mentioned Bonga Bonga a couple of times. And when I think about your sound art, what I associate it with is like a real lushness. It feels really lush and celebratory. And there's the one piece where you're taking audio recordings of women pleasuring themselves, which is amazing. And that's so different from, like, I do engage with a lot of experimental music and have for years and years. But there can be a kind of an emotional austerity to it. So I'm so curious about what it's like for you as you dig deeper into creating work in this way. But then also butting up against these sort of cultural norms in the worlds that you've stepped into.
Yeah, good question. Also, again, thank you for seeing me. yeah, Darmstadt was, I felt like an anthropologist. It was so interesting and bizarre, also beautiful and wonderful. I was there mentoring under Christina Kubisch, who has been working with electromagnetic sound since the 70s. She developed these incredible headphones that, you know, just pick up, they're so high tech and they pick up electromagnetic sounds and you can record them. And of course she makes these beautiful long soundscapes and pieces, and the way to consume the sound is also through the electromagnetics. So she has all her soundscapes emitting through these wires. So when I was there, I was helping her with this installation that was a blend of electromagnetic sounds she had recorded in like 20 different cities. And then she also recorded the Frankfurt Orchestra. And so you're moving through the wires and it's as if you are like moving through the orchestra. So depending on where you're standing, you are in the percussion section or the string section. And so the electromagnetic sounds were blending in with the orchestral sounds. And then she had a string quartet playing live on all four corners of the room in a very new music style, very minimalist, you know, like little quiet whispers, shrieking. And then if you took off her headphones, you would actually only hear the sounds of the footsteps of the people walking around and listening. So it was incredible. So I worked with her and her engineer, Eki, who was also amazing. And the festival was, I think it was what, 2 or 3 weeks? And it was a mix of concerts, installation, and taking these courses. So Christina also gave a course in electromagnetics, which I was, you know, assisting and also participating in. And while I was there, and it was in international, and my mentoring under Christina was my way of transitioning away from popular culture music, from like rock and electronic music, because I wanted, you know, I've always been interested in sound and sound as a meditative force, and a sound as a way of taking you to places and emotions that you know, might not be able to access in other ways. And so I wrote a grant. I cold called Christina, wrote this grant, got the grant, went to Germany, didn't know what to expect because I did not know anything about new music. You know, I knew, you know, John Cage, not even that well, but I was interested specifically in her electromagnetic work. I thought it was so cool that you can record all these hidden sounds. And if people don't know what if folks don't know what electromagnetic sounds are, everything that creates electricity generates a magnetic field that can be picked up with specific coils. So it's maybe in the same family as like a radio wave. And then those sounds are transformed into a way that can be amplified. And it sounds a lot like, depends. It could be in its most annoying form, it just sounds like dial-up internet, or it sounds like, and dial-up internet, oh my gosh, maybe a lot of the audience doesn't even know what dial-up sounds like, but it's like so annoying. It also can sound like the hum of a fridge, but then you can really find beautiful sounds like rhythmic, heavy, deep, bassy sounds, melodic, fluorescent lights have the best melodic sounds. And harmonics, a lot of harmonies in fluorescent lights. So that's, you know, Christina's work. And in seeing other concerts, I was just thrown into this world. I jumped into this world. I wasn't thrown in. I jumped in not knowing what to expect. And I was mind blown. I was like, what? Like, this is just, there's no feelings. Like, eventually a week or two, 10 days later, I made friends, you know, one from Denmark, one from Iran. And I was like, there's no feelings. No one talking about anything. Also, why is no one laughing when this professor is explaining that this, like, you know, orchestra, or it was like a string quartet, is playing electric toothbrushes. no one is laughing. This is like really hilarious to me. Like, cool rhythms being made. They had sheet music and they were playing electric toothbrushes, turning them on and off. Why is no one laughing? And I eventually found out that it was related to this festival and new music, you know, related to like post-war sentiments. And that when feeling is attached to music, it can lead to fanaticism or like, you know, hysteria about war, or just like overly, I don't know, emotional, dramatic outpourings. And in this world, they just wanted to stick to the basics, to the music. So it's super cerebral. And it's not something that I appreciated in all its nerdiness glory. I loved how conceptual it all was. But for me, coming from super, not that I played emo music, but just like a way to be emo, you know, crying through my bass, crying through my lyrics, being angry, you know, raging through electronic music. I just was so blown away. I'm like, there's no feelings. This is so wild to me. But yes, like, you know, the idea of having a really thoughtful concept behind your work, which, you know, is not that foreign to me in terms of the way I liked to make music videos in the past, or lyrics, or even like my sound samples in my electronic work, definitely things that have meaning and concepts behind songs or albums. But this level of like conceptual art that I saw in Darmstadt definitely stuck with me. Like the attention to detail in terms of just like the technical aspects of creating new music, and however it is. Also the experimental side of it, I really appreciated. And that, like, you know, really anything you could make sound, and projects and music, non-music, out of it, you know, from anything, also stuck with me. So I definitely took all that, but for me, I left feeling like I want to make this work, this kind of work, but with meaning and with maybe a storytelling aspect of it. Part of Christina's course, we had to go out and make our own electromagnetic compositions. It was a free form. We could do whatever we wanted. We could present it in however way we wanted. Maybe there were 10 or 15 people taking her course. And I was just feeling like, I can't just go to this tiny German town that I have no connection to and just randomly record sounds and make music and have it meaningful for me. I need it to be meaningful for me. So finally I was like, oh, the McDonald's is the one place in town that is familiar to me. seems to be the one place of gathering for people of all ages, various cultural backgrounds, different economic backgrounds. I'm going to record all my electromagnetic sounds at McDonald's, and it's going to be centered around that. And that's what I did. I just, like, for like 5 days in a row, just like very sneakily, low key, trying to record all these sounds. Cause you have these big headphones, and then you also have a huge, I mean, at the time, what did I have? I had like a Tascam, like a big handheld Tascam. And then at one point I got to use Christina's smaller Sony, but it's still very mysterious and peculiar and kind of suspect looking, just like, it's like you're mining for gold on a beach with these machines, except you're mining for sounds. And I found beautiful sounds because they had fluorescent lights, like real ones. So I'm just like in McDonald's with these devices, waving them on the lights, you know, and then at one point standing on the chair when no one was looking just to grab these sounds. And I wanted to present the work also in a way that again was bunga bunga. So I every day took piles and piles of their coupons and used it to make a giant happy face collage that would be the backdrop of my sound installation. And then I took some of their Happy Meal boxes and photocopied it a bunch of times and then collaged that onto cardboard boxes. And I had the wires that were emitting my compositions in Happy Meal boxes. And I made 5 compositions. Two of them were pure compositions using layered and, you know, cut up electromagnetic sounds from the McDonald's. One of them used acoustic sounds from the McDonald's, so the people talking, like the beeping, everything. And then the other one was a blend of the acoustic sounds from the McDonald's. Like there's a lot of beeping at McDonald's, actually, when you start paying attention, so much beeping. Maybe they're cash registers and I don't know what, but a lot of beeping sounds. So I made a collage, a sound collage of the acoustic sounds from McDonald's and this track from this artist in Chicago. I have a terrible memory for artist names. It's not great. But it's about, it's called Rock and Roll McDonald's. And then the last composition I made was a collage of 9 hip hop songs that reference McDonald's in their lyrics with the beeping sounds in between. And so there's Biz Markie, there's Jay-Z. And that was the first track of the whole installation because I was just so tired of like the sterile gallery, like the rigid sound, new music, you know, culture there, that I was going to be like, boom, like do something completely opposite and over the top and ridiculous. And that's what I did. And I supplemented the installation with basically a booklet of Wikipedia entries describing the McDonald's in different countries. And then I had a call out and people submitted to me their memories and stories of McDonald's. And a lot of them actually are around, you know, community and family and being able to just like hang out there. A friend, her family had migrated from Vietnam to France. And when they were settling, her grandmother would take her and the 9 grandkids to McDonald's while the adults were doing their own thing and settling, you know, and for them it was fun because they got to go with grandma and hang out at the McDonald's, you know, and chill. It's like one of the few places where my band has been on tour that we could go to use clean bathrooms, free Wi-Fi. Like when we missed home, the French fries were the same everywhere. And nobody, you could just loiter there for as long as we wanted. No one's kicking you out, you know. In Tokyo, the McDonald's had businessmen napping. In Taiwan, the McDonald's had a group of elderly, senior citizens, like ladies having their knitting group. Like this was what I saw at McDonald's on tour. So for me, this was, I would say, my first sound piece that was like a big, like, I don't know how else to explain it, but like, F you, no feelings, F you, no meaning, no storytelling. And the people who understood the piece loved it. They were laughing. They were so into it. And then there were definitely a lot of people so confused and just didn't know, especially that hip hop piece. They were like, okay, you got to listen to it. It's so funny. I'm still like, I find it so hilarious. Yeah. So, I mean, my work continues. I feel grateful to have had that experience and the opportunity to be able to use Christina's sound recording equipment and use her equipment to present that installation, her wires, her like incredible, you know, custom made gigantic resistors, her like wave player that all the tracks, I just like learned so much, and grateful that I could use all that gear to do my first sound installation. And then from there, I just started thinking about all the other hidden stories that I could tell. We had a day of a day off in Darmstadt. So Ecky and I took a road trip in his Westphalia to Frankfurt just to check out the big city and to hear the electromagnetic sounds in Frankfurt, because in Darmstadt, which is a tiny town, the electromagnetic sounds are very different than what's in Frankfurt. In Frankfurt, it was so much noisier, so much busier, so much more happening, obviously, because there's so much more electricity and cell phone towers. So we went to do that. And it was on the day, actually, that Hooded Fang went on tour across Canada without me for the first time. And I, you know, made that decision to go mentor with Christina, and Shar Aragoza, really amazing musician, young Filipinx, got her to sub for me. I'm like, if someone's going to sub for me on bass across Canada, it's going to be her. She plays in a band called Mother Tongues. That's her band, with Lucas Chung, and she also plays with Luna Lee. So it's like incredible to see how her trajectory just really skyrocketed. But the day they left for tour is the day that I went to Frankfurt. So it felt like meaningful for me. I was sad that I was missing, that I wasn't hitting the road with them, but it felt good. And it felt like, I don't know, symbolic in a way that I was taking this road trip in this cool hippie van to Frankfurt And that's where I recorded electromagnetic sounds in the red light district there. So many incredible lights, so many beautiful sounds, and made that piece where I blended it with the sounds of women pleasuring themselves. And that's also how I found Sahar Homami. I saw her piece or their piece at Summerworks, and I just cold called them, and they were so down, and they made visuals for it, and eventually performed this piece as a live composition at the Music Gallery. Also grateful for David Dax and giving that opportunity. And the response I got from it was really positive, you know, but the whole point was to show the female orgasm as something that is empowering and for that person, and not, you know, in the way that it is being portrayed in mainstream media with a gaze on the woman, you know, male gaze, or as like an object for someone else's pleasure. So it came through that way. People were like, maybe moments could have been aroused, but more than anything, just like almost scared of it. And the piece that I'm working on now, just finished developing and putting together the pitch for, is in the similar vein, but it's using the sounds of women giving birth and blended in with electromagnetic sounds from one of the hospitals that one of the women gave birth in. And I had a small test run in mid-April, and also got positive feedback. So I'm really excited to present that. Kat Asasio and Sahar Homami, also part of that team. Rose Bolton, amazing composer and sound engineer, worked with her on diffusing the composition on eight channels. And yeah, Matthew Fava at Canadian Music Center really supported the work. So it's so nice. It's just so nice. I'm like, to have these ideas and then the smartest, coolest people be really into working with me. And I'm just like, okay. I'm like, you know, just an ideas gal, and they all know how to do all the things. And I feel like a real, I don't know, like sound art impersonator or something.
I think that's amazing. And yeah, so inspiring. That, like, my take on that is simply that you are pushing against this thing. Like,
can I add one more thing, actually?
Yeah.
Both. Artemis of Color, which is the piece that integrates, you know, the sounds of women and non-binary folks pleasuring themselves, and Simula is the birth sound project. I'm very specifically get call out, or not call out, I make the call out for submissions from BIPOC folks specifically, because I want those voices, you know, in those ways. Like, so apart from these sounds that are normally hidden and not thought about, and very private, I also, you know, want to have, you know, specifically BIPOC voices, you know, in my works as a way of, you know, highlighting and emphasizing the strength of these voices. Thank you.
just from a technical perspective, how are you collecting those recordings of people giving birth?
So I reached out, I made the call out, found folks who were willing to record themselves, wrote a grant, and could compensate everybody for their contributions, because it's a huge intimate contribution. And I gave them all, I gave them recorders and showed their partners how to use them. And they recorded everything themselves. Even the electromagnetic sounds were recorded by one of the partners at the hospital while he was waiting. That particular mother was happy that her partner, who was very nervous, had something to do. And when that birth was done, one of the births happened out in BC, and I messaged them, and I was ready to mail out the recorder, and they were like, oh, we didn't get to tell you, but the birth already happened. The baby came earlier than expected, but luckily her partner, who had worked in sound for many years, recorded it all on his phone. So it was incredible. Yeah. And that was amazing, because he also compensated the partners for their time and support, but he did a lot of the editing for me. He cut it up and gave me a lot of the main sound bites that I used. For the other two, I had to sift through the hour or two and chop it up myself. But that was also an amazing experience in itself, to just hear the process and then choose the sounds. And the sounds were not used in a chronological way. They were used to reflect the emotional journey that they went through. So I interviewed each of the mothers and about their emotional journey when they gave birth. And it was really interesting, because even though all three of them were very different births, one was a C-section, one took 3 days, one took 2 hours, they all had very similar feelings at different phases. And so I synthesized that, and then based on the different emotional journeys that they expressed, made five different movements. And then the sounds, the electromagnetic sounds, were manipulated and edited and filtered to reflect those emotions, and the sounds that were used. So again, it wasn't chronological, but I used the sounds from the mothers that reflected worry, or, the strong intensity of their bodies feeling like they were possessed, and the sounds of what the fatigue sounds like. These are very tame terms compared to what they were describing. But if you ever get to hear the piece, it will definitely speak for itself.
You've been listening to The Drop and the Turning. My name is Rebecca Bruton. What you heard today was my interview with April Aliermo, bassist, writer, songwriter, sound artist, and community artist based in Tacoronto. The excerpts of April's music that I included in today's episode are Artemis of Color, a soundscape of electromagnetic sounds recorded at a red light district, blended with acoustic sounds of women pleasuring themselves, the song Zenith by Fedra, which is April's collaboration with Dan Lee, Happy Meal 2 out of 5, 3 electromagnetic sounds from Louise and Platz McDonald's in Darmstadt, and Simula, which is yet to be released.